Conference recording started.
All right, so we're going to get started. All right, good morning, folks. We're going to get started today. So thank you, everyone. For folks who haven't met me, my name is Stephanie Horry. I'm a facilitator with the Consensus Building Institute, so helping out today with today's meeting. And so we'll go get started with just some welcome and introductions first for this demand management working group kickoff meeting. So if folks don't mind, like, we can do just a round robin introducing ourselves. And so I started with Stephanie. I'm going to turn over and hand off to Justin, and we'll just go around the room.
Hey, so normally I'm not way over here, and I can see your faces a little better. So, but Justin Jensen, Tehama County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. I'm Deputy Director of Public Works Water Resources for the county itself, but I run the district, and I'm also the executive to the GSA, so which is vastly what we are going to be talking about today.
Hello, Bill?
Bill Bohrer, excuse me. I served on the commission until last year. My only expertise in this matter is that my dad bought a ranch here in Tehama, Gerber area, almost 8 years ago, and we pumped a lot of water. But I kind of have a little historical background on what's happened there.
Brendan Flynn, born and raised here. Family has been farming in Tehama County for since the late 40s. I've been general manager of our farming operation since the early 2000s. And groundwater users from South County to North County. So Corning up to Red Bluff, north of Red Bluff in some cases, both sides of the river. And, yeah, that's probably enough.
I'm Steve Grunwald. I'm a small farmer from Tehama and Glenn County. I use both groundwater and surface water in my farming operations there. I'm a crop consultant. That's what pays the bills right now. And I'm on the CSAB, too. Glad to be here. Thank you.
My name is Ben Myrie. I'm from just south of Corning, Corning technically. We have a few hundred acres out west of Corning, out right in the middle of all the eucalyptus trees out there. We run a few cattle on. I also have a background in environmental permitting, wetland delineations, and biological assessments, that sort of thing. I also own an outfitting business for hunting on Catalina Island and have a real estate license, so I do a little bit of everything to pay the bills and feed the kids.
Hi, I'm Michael Ward. I am on the Tehama County Groundwater Commission. I am here probably representing Westside domestic well users, as well as just groundwater resources in the North State. I'm recently retired from the California Department of Water Resources. I have a background in groundwater resources and flood engineering. I think that covers it.
Hi, my name is Ian Turnbull. I'm from the Capay area, lived there 40 years. I'm on the CSAB as an alternate, Corning Sub-Basin Advisory Board. I'm very familiar with a lot of the rural communities, been involved in groundwater issues since the early 2000s. Been fire chief there for 19 years. So I'm pretty familiar with what's going on.
Hal Crane, Groundwater Commission member representing the city of Tehama and also general manager for our family farming operation.
Todd Hamer, commissioner representing Las Mesas Community Service District, work with the Las Mesas Mutual and Surface Water also. Short story, that's it.
Thanks, everyone. And don't want to forget Nicole. Nicole, you never get to introduce yourself. Go ahead. Basically, our lifeblood and what keeps us going. So thanks, everyone, for doing the introductions. Nice, great group of folks today. And so I'll just quickly go over the agenda before I'll hand it over to Justin. And so today, since this is kind of the kickoff meeting for the working group, the primary thing that we wanted to try and do is make sure we have a shared understanding of why we're here, what we're doing, and so we'll first get some background on just what was the impetus kind of driving the need for developing these demand management programs for the Red Bluff, Antelope, Los Molinos, and the Corning sub-basins. And so getting to just some background there, and then moving on to thinking through, like, what are we trying to solve? What's the groundwater concern and problem for that we're trying to solve with developing these demand management programs? And then moving quickly to just what's even normally in the demand management program. And so we'll refer back to the resolutions for that context. And then have a kind of step back and just thinking through, like, okay, given all of that, what do we think is going to be a good solution? What's the criteria for what success would look like? So we'll spend the first part of the meeting on kind of just setting the framework and groundwork for these conversations. But then we're going to really try to pivot into having more of our conversation kind of thinking through, what do we know, what don't we know, what are the data gaps, what are the data needs, opening up that kind of conversation better understand that, so we can kind of get a sense for, like, what information do we need through these in these conversations, such that we can have an informed and data-based conversation and discussion. And then the next big chunk of time is having a discussion, like, there's lots to cover in demand management programs, and there's just unfortunately not enough time to cover everything. So having a conversation and hearing from you all just what's important to you and why, better understanding that, it gives us this, like, a general sense of where do we want to spend a lot of our energy in the discussion. So opening it up for that, there's no decision making. It's not consensus seeking. This is mainly to just make sure that we all have a better understanding of the issues and of each other. And so, and with that, I think part of that conversation, we should have enough time to open it up and just get your initial brainstorming thoughts of just initial ideas of what you think that would be good for the demand management program. So again, not coming to a decision here at all, but just starting to prompt it and kind of delving into the juicy stuff, right? So that's the goal here, is to kind of allocate most of this meeting to having those kinds of conversations and jump-starting this effort. So the goal certainly is to adjourn by 11. And that's always aspirational, so we'll see what we do. But, certainly this is meant to be a pretty informal thing, so if folks are needing a bio break or just, like, mental, all sorts of break, then just we can always just do that when needed. So, and so just for reminding ourselves for participation, again, we're really, really, this is meant to be informal and meant to be organic, but primarily want just making sure that folks are able to contribute their ideas as well as making room for others to contribute their thoughts. Again, the whole concept is the fact that we want to respect each other, and all thoughts and perspectives have value. A great way for to support this is to be asking questions of each other to better understand each other. Again, as I mentioned, this is not a consensus-seeking effort, but may want to foster the dialogue. And the last one is more kind of a logistics thing. I mean, this is folks. Members of the public are able to call in and listen to this conversation, And so let's just kind of keep that in the back of our mind, and so consider the folks who are listening in. They're not able to see our faces and know who's speaking. So to the best that we can, if you can, before state your name, let folks know who you are. And also helpful to just have one voice at a time. That's all because the game plan for today and kind of those logistics. Any questions from folks? Awesome.
All right.
Go ahead,
Michael Ward with District 4. I guess since this is not going to be available video for people who are calling in, I'm wondering how we can make sure that they're understanding the information that we're addressing. As you pull up a slide, especially in this case, we have, six different bullets here. Just with that, keep that in mind, that we just want to keep them informed along the way is what we're talking about, what we're addressing. And also, I'm just curious, Nicole, how many people are on the call at this point? Thanks.
Yeah, very, very good reminder. And fortunately, at least it's not like a really, really complicated figure. So, but it's good. Like the most substantive materials that we have, at least, are the resolutions primarily. And so we can refer folks to that. That's where they can find the information. But very, very good reminder to be thinking through the folks who aren't able to be seeing the same things that we are.
Quick comment, if I could, really quick. When you guys introduce yourselves, first names are fine. We don't have overlap, and this is less formal than a lot of our meetings. So if you just chime in with what your first name is, people should start to recognize that over time, and we can work with that and make it less complicated, I hope.
Thanks, Justin.
Yeah, I have a quick comment. This is Ian. It'd be helpful in the future if there's slide numbers clearly on each slide. That way, when you've got the slide up, you can reference the slide number, and those that are listening can follow along.
Oh, good. Good tip. Thanks, Ian. Any others? All right. Well, with that, we're going to dive into the background. So as I mentioned, that this will go into impetus, kind of the timeline and what we expect the outcomes for this process to be, and then have a better understanding of just what are the assumptions that we're trying that we'll have to just navigate and deal with through this process. And so Justin will cover those first two, and then I will pick it up from there just to review the roles, responsibilities, and the kind of meeting framework for this process. So I get process stuff. So, with that, I will turn it over to Justin.
So first off for me, just thank you all for being here. I know this is time out of your day that you are volunteering to do this work, but it's important. And getting as many perspectives as we can has the best outcome, I hope. It is. Is it working? Is that better? I have to be really close. Sorry. All right. So the reality of this scenario is we turned in a series of groundwater sustainability plans to DWR. They came out of the commission and the board, and were reviewed with some returned issues. A lot of those issues were associated with overdraft and wells going dry. And so when we put in a new plan, we sort of talked about in that plan that, okay, we are going to address those issues with a couple of programs. One of those programs is this program that we're working on today, demand management. We created a couple of resolutions that went in with our plans that stated that we are going to have a program completed and ready to be put in place January 1, 2026 in the northern Tehama basins and the basin to the south, Corning Subbasin, in January 1, 2027. So essentially we said we shall, aka we must, in order to be compliant with this resolution. And the anticipated goal of the program is to mitigate overdraft groundwater level decline and related undesirable results during the GSP implementation period. So essentially what this means is the goal is to reduce overall use of groundwater so that we don't have an overdraft scenario. Balance the use with what gets put in the ground. All right, so we formed an ad hoc. There are three ad hoc members in this room. That's Mike, Hal, and Todd. Ultimately, it is their requirement to bring back whatever comes out of this group to the commission. Intended outcomes. So we want to create a recommendation from the ad hoc. So this working group's goal is to come up with programmatic recommendations to send to the commission as a whole for review, and ultimately they will then make a recommendation towards the board to be put in place. And to draft all these individual elements that create an entire program. And we'll be talking about sort of how that works and what those elements are as we move forward.
Go into assumptions, sideboards, and constraints.
All right. So, we only have specific amounts of information, and certain amounts of data will be able to be gathered, and some will not, right? So, as we move through this, we have a deadline, a time frame in which we might meet. So when we start talking about what information is available and what could be made available, we also have to keep in mind the time frame that we may or may not be able to get that information. We are working with another GSA, right? So Tehama County has a GSA, and so does Glenn County. Right, so the CSGSA to the south shares responsibility for the Corning subbasin. And so as we work through this, we will also have to end up coordinating with them to get the outcomes associated with that basin itself. And ultimately, the board of directors, right, the district board of directors is the responsible final decision-making authority within the county boundaries. So anything that gets codified, right, that it actually is the program that will be put in place must be formalized by them. Other things I think in the assumption is, so first off, I want everybody to know that I am going to talk a lot about things, right? I'll even make recommendations to you, or tell you what I've seen or tell you what data we have, or maybe even tell you what we can't get. But also, I am not a decision maker, okay? So when we have these discussions and when I'm talking to you, please don't assume that what I am saying is the hard, fast rule. It's just me giving advice or me discussing what I've seen or me discussing rules that may exist, not you must do this. Ultimately, what you do is entirely up to you. And so, even recommendations that are against the rules are within your purview, right? You guys can recommend anything that you want to, and that is not for me to say, ultimately. I think that's what I've got.
Great. Thanks, Justin. Before I go, I think like this is actually an important, since this is very much the kind of the scope of what we're doing, so just wanted to pause if anyone had any burning clarifying questions for Justin.
I'm Steve. I do. So why the different timeline for the Corning subbasin? Is that because of the collaboration with Glenn County, or
yeah,
why a different line?
Yeah, so I think that the two boards had different ideas about how much time they wanted to take to put this in place and make it implement. And so 2027 was the compromise in Corning, and the boards for the rest of Tehama County, they really want to show that we are, we're taking action to do what we said we were going to do to DWR, and I hope that that will also prove to DWR that the plan that we submitted is viable, right? So, because ultimately it's our goal to get an approved plan and move forward with our GSPs, and demand management is part of that.
Justin, it's Michael. The document or the plan that we come up with January 2026 for the northern subbasins,
that would apply, I think, to the Corning sub-basin, even though it wouldn't necessarily be implemented until January 2027. Is that the right way of looking at that?
Yeah, you know, my understanding of the way that this is going to end up working is we here in Tehama County have authority in Tehama County, right? And the district has authority in Tehama County, whereas the CSGSA and Glenn County has a different set of authorities. This is all done by their county rules associated with Glenn County. So certain things we may not be able to function identically county to county just because we have different authorities. And so I would hope that our goal is to make everything programmatically as similar as possible, right, so that people can expect and know what they're going to do, but there probably will be minor differences. And yes, I believe that everything that comes out of these meetings will be what Tehama County is going to be doing countywide. So I believe that's the expectation, and it's my understanding that Glenn County sees it the same way. The coordination is just about getting the two plans as close as possible so that we don't have these, you know, way vast differences when we're really regulating the same groundwater.
Really, really great questions.
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do we have any idea when we might get our plan approved from DWR?
So everything they have told me is prior to the end of this year. That being said, I do not know. That's just everything they have indicated is that their goal is to have it prior to the end of the year. So we shall see. And I hope that's true. The sooner, the better. If there are going to be any other further issues, we want to know as soon as possible so we can address them, right? That just makes it easier for everybody to do this work.
No, we don't want to be spinning our wheels if we're going to have to.
That's right. We don't want to reinvent again. So, but I never see a scenario where DWR is going to say, all right, demand management's out the door. I just don't, based on what is happening in other basins that have overdraft issues, I just do not see that being the case. Obviously, nothing's a guarantee.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks, Bill. Any other clarifying questions? All right. We'll just keep on plugging away then. And so the language that you're seeing up here for folks in the room sent out earlier to the working group was just a draft charter that kind of compiles all this a lot of the information to trying to define the scope of what the working group is aiming to achieve and kind of the framework for how you all want to operate together. And so this slide is meant to just give an overview of some of the expectations for those roles. And so for the working group members, it's, you know, again, just a reminder, you were all selected because of your experience and your backgrounds, aiming to really pull from that, so that way we can hear the perspectives and opinions from the groups that you represent. And so looking to you all to bring that forward. And all of that is so that way you can be providing input and feedback on these potential demand management strategies. And so as part of that, we really want to be delving in and having a good discussion, understanding the potential impacts, benefits of these potential management strategies. And so we broaden it past the Groundwater Commission to elicit these a broader set of perspectives. And so really wanting to open up and have that conversation with you all to be thinking through these potential impacts that we're considering. The other one is kind of looking to you to be, as in facilitating the communication, is to be kind of that liaison between the folks that you represent, and so the members of, you know, the friends, families, neighbors, folks that you work with, meant to be that kind of liaison between those perspectives, between the commission, between the ad hoc members, looking to you all to be helping making sure those communication channels are open. And all of this is because we want to be supporting the implementation. We want these demand management programs to be successful, so we're looking for your assistance with that. And then as for the ad hoc group, as Justin had mentioned, it's the same basic expectations and responsibilities. The addition, though, is that the ad hoc is specifically responsible for presenting the recommendations that come out of these conversations. So that is the kind of the roles and responsibilities that we're asking of folks of this group. And a little bit of just kind of the, again, more of the meeting logistics. The thought is that currently that this group will meet monthly. So again, like we're, you guys are the ones who are going to be rolling up their sleeves and really, really delving into this. So meeting monthly, and expecting that the ad hoc will be meeting every other month or just as needed, being able to kind of have that opportunity to digest what they're hearing from you and to start to create those and help form those recommendations. As we mentioned, this is not subject to Brown Act, but we're doing things like, you know, opening up so folks that the public can listen in to these conversations. So still trying to support that transparency while creating space for you all to really delve into this and get a lot of substantial work done. The audio recordings will be posted to the website. The report backs will be done to the commission, and what we would like to do is that it not have staff be the ones to report back to the commission. We would like to have some ownership actually from the working group or the ad hoc. So we could nominate and actually have a specific chairperson for this working group, or if someone just wants to be the kind of designated volunteer, that's all great. The idea is that the report back to the commission is going to be from your voices directly. Staff will develop like very, very high level outcome meeting notes. Again, like being cognizant of Nicole's capacity to do everything. So it is important to make sure that we are documenting the outcomes, but wanted to manage the expectations that we're not developing detailed meeting notes from these. And then more towards just thinking through, you know, if media or others are approach you, the expectation is kind of like normal, where you can direct them to Justin as the GSA program manager to be speaking through these, and reminding folks that you're free to represent your perspectives from your own perspective, but not be speaking for the working group. But certainly you can speak about the working group. So a bit nuanced there. As for the meeting framework for these discussions, we're kind of seeing them happen in five stages. First one is certainly that just formation, prep, the foundation for all this work. And so that's kind of today and these first bits of discussions. Important thing is like because we want to make sure that we're very clear on what those goals and objectives and priorities are for these demand management programs conversations. And then we go into that kind of data finding, gathering information, generating ideas. So get information, utilize it, kind of be thinking through that. That's stage two. That way we can kind of identify potential management strategies. And that will bring us into stage three, where we actually start to better understand, explore, and start to see if we might want to package these up in some way. So that's about like taking all of that, kind of pulling it all together. This is also a great stage where if you haven't already, we strongly recommend for you to be doing outreach to your, your community, your neighbors, friends, whomever, just making sure that folks are aware of these conversations are happening, give them a sense of like, here's the things that we're considering, here's the trade-offs that we've been trying to grapple with. It's a really, really important thing where you're in that middle zone of where you have enough kind of idea, you have enough substance to work with. It's not a complete blank slate. So this is a stage where we often recommend, like if you haven't already, really important to do some outreach during this stage. And then when we go into stage four, that's when we start to kind of like refine and kind of hone in on what we kind of would recommend as those strategies and the program elements, such that when we get into stage five, where we start to kind of finalize into whatever is going to be packaged up and presented as recommendations to the commission. So that's kind of the final stage and for this group. And it's also where we want to have conversations around implementations. Implementation is going to come up in throughout, of course, but this is an opportunity to have a more focused conversation, thinking through, like, okay, of the elements that we're recommending as part of that final package of recommendations, what could we possibly do? Where are there opportunities to actually improve that, the feasibility of those suggestions? So pretty general framework. This is not going to be linear. Of course, there's going to be some iterations here, but it generally falls into these five buckets. So that's process. So before we kind of delve into the next main topic, any clarifying questions for the process part?
I noticed I was assigned expertise on the range management. I don't know how I got that title. Somebody explain it to me.
So you are the cattleman's representative assigned from the Farm Bureau.
Okay.
And that includes all cattlemen, not just irrigated land-based cattlemen. So that's those folks that run cattle everywhere in the county.
Okay, well, I think I can do that. I just wonder how it came about.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay.
Certainly, that said, I know that things were kind of like put into general categories, but as we heard from some folks, you wear a lot of hats, and so even if we get into real estate, I mean, the idea is that you bring in all these, your experiences and your histories. We just wanted to kind of name particular expertise that we wanted to pull from for this conversation. Any other clarifying questions? All right.
One question, Mike. I guess I've been trying to encourage listeners on the phone to supply written comment or provide written comment since they can't comment otherwise. And I think I just want to clarify, Justin, I think you have volunteered your email address, you know, for anyone who wants to submit comments. Will that work for you?
Or? Yeah, we actually have a
you might have to get closer to the mic.
We have a GSA email address that we use for those.
Okay,
and we post
good.
It, and it'll get posted on our website for that purpose.
Great,
as well.
Thanks a lot.
Again, another major opportunity is, again, as part of those report outs to the commission, that's another even more direct way that we encourage members of the public to be interacting and providing their thoughts. So that's another opportunity to leverage.
I have a comment. This is Ian.
Yeah.
So notification of these meetings is going out to the email list, is that correct? To everybody on the list? So if they're not on the list, is there another location they can look, website or something?
So it has been posted to the Flood Control Facebook page. We're switching over to a new agenda management, and I'm trying to figure out how we post things for meetings that aren't being held there.
Mm-hmm.
Course that I'm trying to work out, and eventually I
want them
to be posted in the same place as our other meetings.
Okay, thank you.
So we have anyone who's on the email list, we have Facebook, and then Nicole is doing her best to see if there's a way to get that posted to the general meeting portal. But, and then also, again, at commission meetings, that's another opportunity to let folks know of upcoming meetings.
And I hope it will be our goal to set our next meeting date at every meeting. And therefore, it's publicly stated out loud, it's in the recording, and we all have that set up well in advance of when that meeting is going to be. So, A, you can all prepare for what's going to happen, and B, the folks that want to listen in have plenty of notice as to when that meeting will be.
All right. No more questions, and we can delve into the better understanding what are we trying to solve here? What's the groundwater concerns and problems that we're trying to grapple with the developing demand management programs? So I will turn it over to Justin.
Thank you. You can go to the next slide, actually. So, by the way, for you folks who don't participate in this every day, LSCE is a consultant hired by the district to assist with plan generation, data and information gathering, and also presentations of some of that information to some of these groups. So you'll probably see them in person at some given times and interact with them at some given times, but you're commonly going to see their name at the end of at the bottom of documents that show data and informational presentations. So they're the technical team. All right, so if you look at this map here on your right, this came from GSPs, but it's a conglomerate of the plans for the basins, right? So when we look at this, this isn't just Red Bluff, Las Molinas, Antelope Subbasin, Corning Subbasin. This is all of them put together on one map from each of those GSPs. And it, but it also looks at, it adds a layer to that map, which talks about sort of the risk of decline. So we have in our plan a definition of what would be undesirable when it comes to overdraft, right? If you have a decline of 7.5 feet in a five-year period, which represents about 1.5 feet per year, you then could be exposed to undesirable results. And that is the primary thing that we should be trying to avoid according to our plans. So this map, you see the red hot spots there. Those are the areas that have those high risk of that overdraft scenario. The little circles that you see, those are areas during the plan creation that were identified that have clusters of reported dry wells within them. Just to be clear, and I know we've said this tons of times, those wells have never been inspected to know for sure whether or not they're dry. The total number of wells within those clusters that are dry is unknown. What we do know is many wells in those clusters were being reported dry during the last big drought cycle, and that is an indication that there is a problem in those areas, right? It is not those, we definitely have 400 dry wells right here. We don't know that. What we know is that there is lots of reports of dry wells within these circled areas. That is an indication that there is a very high potential that there is an issue of some sort there. All right, so, and for some clarification, our technical group has broken down each of the subbasins into a series of polygons that are represented by a well that we record the hydrology of, and so we can all see what's happening with that well, and it is related to the rest of that polygon. So these polygons that you see here, broken up into different pieces, are all associated with monitoring. All right, so you can see these focus areas, right? These areas in red and these circled areas that are defined as focus areas for us to work with regarding demand management, future regulation of other sorts as well. All right, what you're looking at right here, upper aquifer only results, right? We use that in this case as the sort of determinant for those risks, but we also monitor lower aquifers and we'll be using some of that data as we move forward as well. So that where you see differences and where they tend to mirror each other. All right.
What's yes, the surface area, acres or whatever, in each polygon? Roughly?
Holy smokes, they're different. And really? The reason why that is because we don't have as many RMS wells as we would like. Those are the wells that I'm referring to that we have the hydrology for, long-term data. And so they have to vary. They do their best, essentially, to get as close as they can to similar conditions in a polygon. So it might be a portion of two polygons covered by an RMS well. You can see the shapes aren't perfectly always in that sort of hexagonal pattern of the polygons. Some of them are broken into sort of these longer areas, and that's because we just don't have as many, particularly as you move west away from the river, monitoring sites. So it's difficult for, we try to correlate, right, to an area that is hopefully similar. That data will be improving all the time. How much improved data I have to present you before we put this plan in place, I don't know yet. So hopefully over time those polygons will get smaller and smaller and smaller as we get more detailed information, but right now some of them are huge. Just to be clear, some of them are really small because we've got good data. Some of them are way too big.
Like a couple thousand acres?
Thousands.
Thousands of acres?
Yes. Yeah.
Hey, Justin, can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
This is Ben. So the wells we're seeing up there, those are monitored wells? Or are these?
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. These, by an agency, someone's checking these water levels?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. They're kind of monitored twofold, right? We do monitoring ourselves, but also DWR does a lot of monitoring, and we share data on those monitoring networks. Some of these are multi-completion wells, right, where we have more than one stem in one big well sealed from each other so we can determine what's happening at different levels. That's the best data you can get, right, where you really know what's happening everywhere. Some of them are an egg well that exists somewhere. Some of them are a domestic well that exists somewhere. Because that's what data we have. And so we tried to use the ones for the representative wells that have long enough term data to where you can actually see what's occurring over time, right? We have way more monitoring wells in the county than this. Some of them got monitored from 1945 to 1978. Well, that's not going to be terribly helpful to us right now, right? We can look at that data and we can talk about that data, but using them as a representative well, so what's happening can be difficult, right? So, and the other way is true too, where they started in 2021, and that can be hard for us to say, well, what's happening in this area? Well, since 2021, that's not really going to be terribly helpful. We can look at it again and see what's going on, but we can't use it as a representative well per se.
This is Ben again. How come in the past we haven't taken more proactive role in looking into domestic wells, people calling to go, hey, my well went dry? Wouldn't that be pretty good data as far as, I mean, I sold a house to someone, friend of mine, and it turned out their well was only 30 feet deep, and they went dry and drilled a new one. But I think that would be valuable data for someone to go out. I know it costs money to do all that, but
yeah,
to check depths of wells, and if these wells are really dry, wouldn't that give a better picture over time?
So historically, drought response has not been associated with the flood control and water conservation district. It's been associated with the environmental health department. And so there's been this sort of isolation of information up until relatively recently between what happens because of droughts and the response to that. And it was always a thought that, you know, dry wells must be this sort of, you know, drought response associated thing, right? We're having a drought, wells are going dry. It's become more of an issue associated with groundwater sustainability more recently. And so in our plans, we have said, hey, we're going to commit from here on out to say if a well gets reported dry, we're going to go look and see what it is. But we have had very bad data before that. And I'm not saying that's anybody's fault. Tama County is let's just be clear, a governmentally poor county. Right, we do not have a great deal of resources unless we get funding. Stephanie is here, paid for by the state of California, not paid for by the taxpayers within Tama County. Right, and so unless we can get those resources from somewhere else, we generally do not have the capability to do that. That's improving now. We're hiring more staff in the GSA. We're going to be working on doing this, and we are committing to confirming them as we move forward.
I'm going to flag these as, because I think like these are important things to actually bring up later on conversation, like one term, just thinking through the long-term funding feasibility, like again, like not only a conversation that we can have later today, but also one to revisit during this process, particularly when we're thinking through what would help out with the implementation feasibility of ideas. as well as I think this is also a good one to loop back on of just what data do we have, and so it goes into the what do we know, what don't we know, and those data gaps. So I'm going to flag that and put a pin on that one, but is there any takeaways from this one just for now? This is meant to be like that there is a concern about groundwater level declines. Their focus areas have been kind of identified utilizing these polygons to kind of give a little bit of structure for how you might methodically approach these. And just FYI for folks, like these are all just screenshots straight from the board, Monday's board materials. So it's not like these are new information or that's not publicly available. It's all in the board materials.
I have a comment to Brendan's question on the size of the polygons. I think it would be helpful, Justin, and you might know off the top of your head. If not, you can get it to us. Probably be helpful for the group on the number of acres per subbasin, or maybe the acres, the total acres of that outline, so it puts in concept the scope of what we're dealing with.
Yeah, maybe a presentation by LSE about generation of polygons and the sizes of them and why.
It could be that. I mean, the generation of them, I think, is pretty well explained. I mean, they had to be formed based on where you have a monitoring well to do
right.
That. To put the scope of what we're dealing with, how many acres are we dealing with within the highlighted areas, right?
Yeah, we can do that.
And by sub-basin.
We can definitely do that.
Because that plays into a lot of the concepts, you know, and then how many irrigated acres are within each of those areas. Then basically, obviously, if you got a 20,000 acre within a sub-basin outline of that, 9,000 is irrigated land, then it gives everybody the perspective of what we're working on.
Very reasonable.
Thanks. I'll flag that as another possible data need, so number of acres per the highlighted areas.
Relative.
And
land use within them.
Land use. And that kind of brings up to one of the next ones. Not this one, but the next one on land use. But
before we go there, can I
yeah, go ahead.
A question? Predicted drawdown, 23 to 28. Who's making that determination?
The technical hydrologists using the model.
We have any input to that? Does this group have any input to that?
Input to the model? I don't. We would have to ask LSE if we could give them input to the model. But the model uses data that we do have now to generate a predictor.
Yeah. Kind of depends on where you start. I mean, we could have predicted 2 years ago what it was going to be in 5 years. It'd be entirely different than 4 years ago. It might be different than today. I don't know.
And how much rain ultimately occurs any given year could be different. All of those things are so incredibly true. We could have 10 years of record rainfall starting this year. That could absolutely happen. And if that does happen, boy, we can all take naps. But we are working with data that shows the most likely outcomes, right? They use these ranges of potential outcomes, and we're using data that represents the most likely outcome, right? And if we were all gambling men and we were going to Vegas, we would hopefully be betting on the most likely outcome. Otherwise, you're going to lose your money, right? So ultimately, that's what the data that we have to use, and we'll use that technical advice. But what you recommend moving forward can be based about how you feel something is going to happen. That's perfectly okay. And so ultimately, that's up to you all.
So, point of clarification, I guess, where we are in this process is that there's an assumption has been made or the presumptions have been made that there will be drawdown, and this slide sort of speaks to that, I suppose. And so that leads to demand management, right?
That's right, yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So that's why we're here.
Factually has been drawdown. Right? I can show you, we'll be looking at hydrographs as we move, and you'll be able to see that.
Correct.
There factually has been drawdown.
Based off.
We're just talking about how do we predict what can happen in the future, right? So that we can respond correctly.
Right, which we can't predict, but we're going to do our best.
Do our best.
Speaking of data gaps, and maybe speaking more to what Hal is talking about, is also the definition here, so we know what it is that we're working with. I know there's a lot of data in these reports, and this is fairly late in the stage. But
have those data gaps been defined? So has there been a sort of a description of the amount of data or the type of data that is imperfect, and that so we're making presumptions based on imperfect data? Because we, as you just described, some of those polygons don't even have a monitoring well in them, and the monitoring wells are the best we have, right? So they could be anything from a domestic well to a commercial ag well to a DWR monitoring well that was designed for the purpose of monitoring. So, for example, in a perfect world, we would have a exactly engineered, identical monitoring wells in a grid format throughout any given sub-basin, right, which we don't have, right? And had we known this, we would have done that 20 years ago, and we would have, you know, dropped in 1,000-foot, 4, 6-inch, 2-inch, whatever they are, identically designed and engineered monitoring wells in all those areas, but we don't have that. So we have the best data that we have, which is, as I described, there's all these sort of disparate, not even well-defined necessarily, unless there is a definition, a list of each of these monitoring wells, so we could say, all right, that well is X, this well is X, this well is X, and so that we as a committee can say, while we're making our assumptions about what we need to do with demand management, what is the data that we're working with to build that plan off of? So that's probably in the data, right? And maybe I need to be pointed to that to say, right, what is each one of those, that yellow and black, that's a monitoring well, or that's a well that's being used for monitoring. It's not a monitoring well. It's a well. It's a hole in the ground. And I would imagine that all of the details around that are available.
They are.
And so the point maybe is that have we said, all right, if this is a 150-foot domestic well or 100-foot domestic well that we're using for data, how is that good, bad, or indifferent than a perfectly designed monitoring well? Has that been defined or not really?
No, and I'm not 100% sure you could define that specifically, because it'll be changed per well.
As long as we're making assumptions, we could assume that a 80-foot domestic well, you know, that is 80 years old is not as good an indication of the health of an aquifer than a 1,000-foot specifically engineered and designed for monitoring well, with, like you said, the with the monitoring at specific points.
Multi-completion.
Thank you. That's the technical term I'm looking for. I'm catching up on terms and acronyms here. So anyway, if that list is there, if a definition of gaps of data has been developed, could we point to that? And if it hasn't been developed, from the standpoint of making recommendations with imperfect data, we should probably understand how imperfect is the data.
Yeah, we definitely do have data gap information.
Okay.
We definitely do have the types of wells that are monitored, so you can get a feel for what those are, what their depths are, the best we know of their screening intervals. And to be clear, there are even some we don't know the screening intervals on.
Right.
Right? We're going to have to scope them at some point, probably.
Right.
Or the depth.
What's that?
Or the depth.
Or some of them we don't even know the depth perfectly. Yeah. Yeah.
Date of completion.
Yeah.
Type of drilling, you know,
exactly,
right? They reverse and rotary, where they bucket tool, you know, all these other things that we would determine how good a well is at
presenting
water to that column, right? So
yep.
Anyway.
Yeah, and to your point, you're right. Ideally, we would have multi-completion wells in, say, 640-acre grids across the entire county, and that would make our job so easy.
Right.
However, that costs, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Right.
And that's money that would have to be expended, so we're probably going to have to use, at least to some extent, the data that we have.
Right.
You
know, if there's an understanding of breadth of or the aspect of the imperfection of the data, how fallible is the data?
Yep, absolutely.
And to further that point, I think probably Brendan, to your point,
we know which ones are multi-completion and representative, and we might have to have some consideration given into the quality within a given polygon that
right.
we're discussing.
Right, as we look at it, polygon. What is the information that we're using to determine that
yeah.
a polygon is red, yellow, or green?
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, and here's a little bit of, you know, sort of speak to that when we look at this map, right? So this is predicted changes in storage from the modeling, right? So what we're looking at right here is how much drawdown is predicted. These total numbers went into our plan, right? These are modeled numbers for how much drawdown we're going to have. Does that mean it is actually what's going to happen? Absolutely not, right? These are just predictors. So, but what we do see is these sort of general trending scenarios where you have areas where it's pretty clear, you know, you have production pumping and you do have, you know, some amount of overdraft.
Mm-hmm.
However, some of that is extrapolated. You can really see, and I'm going to walk up here, sorry for those of you who are listening, and point at something because I think it's important for you folks to see. A polygon like this on the west side, right? That's a three-point polygon. It's a huge area, right? Has a huge predicted drawdown in it. And that's because the math gets extrapolated across a really big area. Does that mean that you're actually going to have that much overdraft in that area? No, not at all. The reality of what we should probably be talking about is these small polygons, right? These much smaller, easier to understand areas that are in more developed areas are places that we can talk about and concentrate on and say, hey, look, these areas are where we can do work, right? Where we can talk about where we can reduce demand. But there's not any demand here. This isn't dropping because there's significant demand in this area. There's not significant development. It's vastly rangeland, right? It's almost all grass. It's almost all not irrigated. So, but the work that we can do is probably more associated with the better data that we have, and that's to your point, right, of, hey, you know, what should we be talking about? Should we really be trying to do a bunch of demand management work in an area like this? We should probably try to tackle the stuff that we know first. Ultimately, up to you guys as well, but I'm just talking about the best use of your time.
What's the time frame that data was developed from? What years?
Oh, I don't have the answer of that one off the top of my head.
Well, that brings up another point that I wanted to make, Todd Hamer, is that we're dealing with two sets of data on a lot of this. A lot of it is the year-to-year data that went in on our yearly reports, and that's significantly different than the predicted modeling done from the initial GSP and what that model gets run basically every 5 years for the updates, but in between we have to do our yearly reports, and that looks at, like I said, year-to-year data. So something like 2021 gives you huge numbers of drawdown compared to the previous year type idea. So,
and it's going to be important to know what years. If we're using the data on average drawdown, it's going to be important to the group to understand what the time frame was, because obviously if it's data that incorporated the 5 years of drought or drier than normal years, et cetera, so to put it in perspective and scope.
Yeah, no, totally agree. And as we move forward and you get data, that'll all be much clearer. You know, this is for the point of initial representations of why we're doing what we're doing and why we're discussing it. But data is, I'm glad that we're talking about data-driven conversations. That's what's important, right? To understand the data, understand what's happening, and, you know, make a decision based on what we think is the best possible goal. So, but this is just to give us an idea of what got us here and where we're talking about, and hopefully areas we can concentrate on and things that this work group can really be effectual at, right? And as you can see right here, it's calculated average change per year, right? So that's a one-year drawdown overdraft in the calculation of the model. All right. So land use, and this goes back to that same point that we already made. If you look out that big three-point polygon up there north of Rancho Tehama, look how much developed agricultural land in there that's irrigated there is. Tiny, tiny amounts. If you look at the polygons with overdraft closer to the river as you move to the east, we have both smaller polygons and more land use that has pumping within it, right? Probably the biggest bang for the buck when we start talking about things we can do that represent demand management. All right. So, rationale. There are sort of a series of issues, and I know that you folks that work in the practice of agricultural irrigation really understand how this dynamic has functioned over time because it's affected you. Decreased supplies of surface water lead to increased use of groundwater, but it has a two-sided sword, right? Because not only does it pump more water out of the ground, it also removes replacement water that was going into the ground for that irrigation purpose. So the expectation is that there will be further reductions in surface water availability over time for multiple reasons. One, generally speaking, that has been the regulatory path, right? Generally speaking, the regulatory path has been decreasing the availability of surface water supply over time. We've seen this relatively consistently. Two, as we move through groundwater sustainability, more and more agencies and individuals will be trying to suck up any excess surface water they can get because it's the biggest bang for the buck when we're talking about groundwater sustainability, right? And so more and more right to more and more outlier availability, right? And then the third thing is all, and once again, we talk about this as a assumption over time, right? Modeling. The models indicate drier and drier cycles, right? So long-term dries with shorter-term wets appears to be the cycles we are moving into. And that also lends itself to at least periods of time with significant drops in the availability of surface water. Okay. So the gig to this is it is unlikely in the future that there will be enough surface water to offset pump supplies, and that is the impetus for why demand management is likely to be a requirement. So how much water is there? How much are we likely to get in the future? How much can we pump out of the ground to have a long-term sustainable program, right? We're talking not today, we're talking 20, 40, 60, 80 years from now, long-term sustainability. All right, and then things like dry well mitigation, right? As you change how much demand management you put in place, you then also change other programmatic outcomes. If you pump more water, you may be mitigating more wells, right? That's that cost balance that we're going to have to be talking about. That's an economic impact, right? Because let's be clear, the people of Tehama County will be paying for all of the work that we do. That's dollars that will come out of local pockets. That is how Sigma is set up. So if you choose to go lighter on demand management, you expose yourself to higher dollar risk in well mitigation. They are trades that we'll all have to discuss, and we'll all have to talk about those monetary trade-offs as we move along.
Just point out, based on those assumptions.
Based on those assumptions. Yeah. Always, always, everything I say is based on those assumptions. All we have is the data we have. So.
And Justin, do you mind, just really quickly though, I mean, there is a dry well mitigation ad hoc and working group who's going to really, really hone in on the well mitigation side. Can you speak just a little bit quickly to that? Just like there's going to be overlap certainly in the conversations with what this group is going to be doing, but I think it's helpful just to kind of get a sense for where the delineation is and kind of where the dry well mitigation folks are going to really, really delve into.
Yeah. So programmatically, the resolution that is requiring us to put demand management in place has a twin resolution programmatically requiring well mitigation be in place. Well mitigation is, for all intents and purposes, fixing or replacing wells that have no longer able to pump, gone dry, provably so, because of overdraft, because of pumping. So not because of drought, but the thing is, we all have to keep in mind that we are regulating groundwater over a long term. There will be dips and there will be rises, right? And so you're regulating it to the average, but you cannot ever have undesirable results. And so there are certain definitions about undesirable results that say, hey, you have so many wells go dry, it doesn't matter what the problem is, you're going to have to address that. And so the other group is going to be talking about how do we determine what caused a well to go dry, what we're going to do about it, et cetera, over time. And that program, and we are going to be determining the demand management portion of it, but they definitely have overlap and interrelation to each other. As I just alluded to, money is probably the biggest one.
Unless there are clarifying questions, I'm going to keep pushing this forward because I think the juicy stuff we've already delved into a bit on data gaps, so we're going to loop back onto some of the threads that we had brought up earlier. But I know like folks are really, really wanting to get into that. So we just have a few slides just for the context. So unless folks have burning questions, I'm going to push us forward. So let's go into just better understanding what we expect to be in the demand management program. And the next few slides are all pulling directly from the resolutions on the demand management program. So the resolutions 2/24 and 4/24.
All right. So program measures. What can we do right now? So oftentimes these are things like request volunteer action. Hey, pumpers, would you please do this list of things? If you do this list of things, it hopefully will lead to less of phased adaptive implementation, which is another word for the worst stuff, right? The worst stuff is here's how much water you have to pump. Here's how much you can use per acre. Here's how much total you can pump. These truly restrictive regulatory things that say you're going to reduce how much water you use from the ground, right? So two categories, the sort of this low-hanging, hey, help us out here, working with everybody and saying, can we do these things to try and get the demand to the lowest possible by volunteer? And then we will have to start talking about, hey, if we can't get there that way, what's going to have to happen as that second step? That's that mandatory action. So, and setting when those occur, right? Like, hey, we're looking at this data we have. When we get to this point, okay, this is when this is going to have to happen, right? So, and that's all going to be what we are getting your input for. All right, public outreach and engagement process. This is probably the hardest thing in my job that I have ever done in any, I've worked for a couple different governmental agencies, Tehama County, public outreach, really, really difficult. Super rural, right? So you have huge variance in what people have access to, right? Also, huge differentiation in, you know, sort of wealth class and access to resources, right? So you can get people that have free time and can come and participate, and you have people that can do nothing but work every single hour that they have available in order to support themselves. They're never going to be able to participate, right? And so that's another issue in Tehama County. But also, I think, you know, just one of those people live in rural areas because they want to be left alone and do their own thing, right? And they don't want to have to think about these bigger issues. They just want to live. And I understand that. That's an innate thing. But how do you reach those people to get their ideas of something that's going to affect them potentially greatly? Coordination of program with other related programs. We talked about this. Glenn County is going to have programs, but others are too. You know, if Vina Subbasin says, please feel free to pump as much water as you want to. In fact, we want you to pump this thing way down. We are going to have to overcome that issue, because it will affect us in some areas. So that's that coordination bit. All right. So this is the stuff that's on the resolution that we are going to have to come up with. Identify the areas where these actions are going to have to be taken. Determination of how much water can be pumped in those areas. Determination of an appropriate transition period, meaning DWR doesn't tell you, hey, you have to be sustainable today and you have to cut everybody off entirely today to meet this goal. That's not how this regulation works, right? We have 2042 is our date, and we're going to be saying, hey, so we need to sort of put these things in sort of these soft transitions. When do you want these cycles to happen over time? How much are we going to let something dip? How much are we going to determine that we can do in the future? So when are we going to adapt and make changes? How are we going to allocate water and enforce those issues? What monitoring are we going to use for that enforcement purpose? And the big dog in the room, how are we going to pay for all of this? Right? Ultimately, I would assume that everything you guys are going to be thinking as we move along, everything is a trade-off when you talk about funding, right? Economic impact versus straight financial impact. So you reduce how much somebody can do something. So that's a monetary impact, or you charge them money to do that. That's a monetary impact. Everything's going to be this sort of trade-off that we're going to have to work through. All right. A little bit more. So this is that, you know, sort of immediate voluntary stuff that we can talk about. And by the way, you guys that do this work every day, and that's the reason why we invited folks to this panel that our irrigators are, we're really going to be relying on you to help us figure out how to do these things, what's best. You guys do this every day and know how this works. But what are the BMPs to reduce groundwater? What can be done in any individual's irrigated parcel to reduce the amount of groundwater they use? So efficiency increases, water conservation. You know, things like, hey, is it common for somebody to have an area on an irrigated parcel that where a little bit of repurposing can happen so that we can store water there? What incentives are most likely to work? Are there places where dry farming might be more appropriate, where fallowing might be more appropriate than restricting how much somebody could pump in a given area? And those are the discussions we're all going to have, and that's sort of that voluntary side of, hey, what can we do here? So we're not the agency that sets land use rates, right? That's a totally different agency, and all we can do is say, hey, please do this or please don't. What we are the agency that does is regulate groundwater use. And so the less we are successful with the first part, the more of that regulation that will have to be in place in order to get the outcomes that we predict, right, or that we need to predict. So what do we do? You know, what are the options? So in the resolution, it talks about these options, right, where you're literally just saying you can pump 2 acre-foot per acre. That's what you get. That's your allocation. You cannot have a pump that does this in this area. Well restrictions. Pumping restrictions. You can only pump this much during this time and this much during this time or this much during this time where you're doing offset pumping, things of that nature. And water marketing. So everybody probably understands how that works. That's buying water from your neighbor, basically, and them, say, fallowing.
All right. So, again, all of this information is directly pulled from the resolution. So for folks particularly in the room, you're not expected to read the itty-bitty tiny font there. But we wanted to present this information to give you a sense of, like, this is the breadth of things that this group could be talking about. It's going to be a impossible order to talk about everything. And so what we want to be able to do is later today is to go back to these lists and have a conversation of what's important to you, what do you think should be discussed. But before I want, though, to keep moving us forward so we can get into those conversations. So unless there's, certainly we can delve into better understanding these in a little bit, but if there are any burning clarifying questions that folks have. Otherwise, I'm going to quickly go into just kind of principles and criteria, and then we can do a quick time check just to figure out how folks are feeling, if you need to do any sort of bio break. And then we'll delve into the data gaps and what and what's important for you all.
Can I ask a quick question? This is Ben. Are there in Tama County at this point any well drilling restrictions? Or is there anything in place at this point?
So through the district, there is one currently existing, and that is a sealing and screening depth requirements for certain types of wells. And that's based on the area in which they are in. It sets a minimum sealing and screening depth, and it isolates domestic pumping from larger production pumping based on sort of the layer of the aquifer that it is pulling from.
And that was determined by our county?
That was done through the GSA, in fact.
Okay.
And then currently there is about to go into effect I'm sure you guys have probably already heard this. There was a gubernatorial action that created a onus of the GSAs to approve the installation of a well and say it is not outside of the sustainability plans, the outcome or the desired outcome of your sustainability plans to install this well, right? This checkbox that must go through. There is work happening right now through the board that is going to create those restrictions where certain areas you won't be able to get that box checked from the GSA, and therefore a permit will not be issued for a specific well in a specific area. And that is happening before we do any of our work. You'll be able to use that as you move forward to also steer demand management.
Thanks. Good to know the update on the management restrictions. So unless anything else, going to just quickly go over. It's good to pause and just have a conversation around, like, what do we think a good solution is going to be? What are the criteria and components of that? So that way we can, when we're trying to evaluate all the things that could be put onto the table, being able to kind of find, there's going to be trade-offs. And so having some criteria outlined, I think will really help that discussion. And so based off of, conversations that we've heard from, folks in Tehama County, just overall, pulled together some of those principles and criteria based off of that. So certainly in terms of principles for what we think a successful demand management program should have, certainly trying to get meet that long-term sustainability groundwater goal. And so we want to be thinking through, we want to preserve these, not just our groundwater, but the values that come related to that. So the environmental values, social values, economic values, we want to have these for the long term. So to the best of our ability, that the demand management program should be in service of that. Things should be fair. They should be equitable. How that's defined is definitely opened up to the discussion, but certainly the goal is that these things should be fair to all the groundwater users and uses. We want to support having a transparent and clear process for having these discussions. Again, that's one reason why we're opening up these meeting discussions for the public to be listening in. And aligned with that is because it's in support of being inclusive. And so we want to be working together. We want to bring in voices into these discussions. The demand management program, though, we have to acknowledge that we don't know everything. We can't predict everything. So things are going to have to be flexible and adaptable. So incorporating that into what we're going to build out here. And to the as much extent as possible, since we have limited resources, we should be as efficient with the costs as much as we can and optimize and leveraging what we have to work with. In terms of specific criteria, it's helpful when we have those clear goals and objectives, and so you have like the SMART objectives, and so, you know, something measurable and something, you know, really concrete there. So to the best of our availability, really giving those definitions are going to be helpful for success. As we've been talking through here, we wanted to have these discussions and decisions based off of data as much as possible. Things should be, you know, legal. So legal and regulatory compliance is definitely a component that we should that we want to adhere to. Having being clear of what those monitoring and evaluation procedures, again, that kind of builds into that adaptability. So being able to know, like, how are we going to be able to track if we're succeeding and be able to make data-driven discussions of how we might change things. So, again, being as much as we can clear on those. Thinking through the funding and the resources needed to support this. The other one, risk management. Again, thinking through, like, you know, what could go wrong, and are there ways that we can manage that, mitigate that, minimize it. Always want to be supporting and improving upon our outreach and engagement. And then, as we have talked previously, though, we wanted to make sure that we are supporting the coordination across different programs, agencies around there. And all of this is we are continuously building towards, you know, fostering a process that is building trust and accountability. So those are general ones. A couple of ones that I think I heard also during the conversations was acknowledging the data quality of things, and so being at least very clear of our understanding of how confident we can be in that data. So being very clear of, like, what do we know, what don't we know, and how are we navigating particularly what we don't know. Pushing forward, are there other principles or criteria that you all feel is important to? Oh, another one I was going to say Justin had mentioned this with thinking through the Glenn County side, that a criteria that could be added is that as much as possible, we would like the Corning demand management program to be as applicable to what's going on with the Los Molinos, Red Bluff, and Antelope side. But other any criteria that's kind of bubbling up for folks? All right. So before, this is kind of like a nice halfway point before we really delve again into all the juicy good stuff. So I want to just check with the group. Like, you've been sitting for almost an hour and a half. So do folks need to have any sort of bio break, just like 5-10 minutes, stand up, go to the bathroom, just get the blood flowing?
I could use a fiver.
All right. Justin needs a fiver. So it's 9:54 right now, so how about at the top of the hour, 10 o'clock, we'll join again, and we'll dive into knowns and unknowns, and then thinking through what's important to you and why do we want to talk about
unknowns.
All right. All right, are we ready to go? Are you missing anyone?
I'm not easily triggered.
No, okay. I guess got switched up by an empty chair. All right, I think we're ready to get started again. And so...
Yeah, that's what I was curious about.
I wanted to pause, though. We had... We're missing Mike. There we go. There's a mic. So before we go into talking about data gaps, data needs... want to pause. Like the last thing that we had talked about was just principles and criteria. Now that you've all had a chance to kind of get up and walk around, was there anything that folks wanted to say about, does this look like the right principles and criteria? Again, I think another one that we had just discussed adding was, clear about why you should trust that this is getting written down to there. And aligned with Corning.
Hey, Stephanie?
Yeah.
Michael, on the criteria and evaluating, maybe this is just a no-brainer. I think it needs to address the GSP and the overriding, I guess, the general goals of the GSP as far as domestic wells, best available use of water, things like that. And I should be able to cite examples for you, but that essentially is it. It needs to be support the GSP.
Absolutely. All right, added that one. Anything else that's coming up for folks? Again, this does not have to be final, but I think this is does this look like a pretty solid set of initial criteria to be working from? Anything that's saying like, no, definitely don't agree with, or is this seeing some nods that this is a decent start? All right. So with that, then let's go into having a discussion around whatever the next slide is, if I can get to it, the what do we know and what do we not know. And so what we did was we kind of just, Justin and I had just started an initial list, very, very high level, of course. We don't want to get into too much of the details because that's part of what the next conversations are going to be. But we wanted to just start a list of what do we know, what existing information do we have, and then what are some of the data gaps and needs that we think are going to be important for having these conversations. So maybe I'll actually turn it to Justin to go over those top bullets that we have, those four top bullets on the existing information and the three on the right for the data gaps and needs.
Thank you. All right, so here's what we have. Groundwater levels. Most everything is through spring of 2024. Not just our own RMS wells, which we can talk about, but also a huge network that's managed vastly by DWR, and we can look at sort of broad spectrum water levels throughout the county. Calculated groundwater storage. Once again, calculated is the key term. Models for predicting change in groundwater levels in storage. Models, right? Land use data and existing information. All right. Data gaps and needs that we just know, carte blanche. A, groundwater monitoring, we already talked about this, covers these huge areas in some cases and is not necessarily a perfect descriptor of what's happening throughout the entire polygon. Groundwater-dependent ecosystems. So the next big elephant coming up is this GDE work that's required by SGMA. So right now, our plans do not take into account the water requirements of GDEs. So once that is required, which is looking like it's in just a couple years, we'll have to have that information and at least a plan put forward and how to address this. It is likely that the estimated amount of water that we have available to pump will decrease. Does this make sense? Because some of that water will have to be allocated to GDEs. So we're not there yet, but it's something that we should always be conscious of when we're going forward, because that's going to have to be addressed. Current land use data. So land use data changes all the time. So I'm really learning how much it changes, even in a rural county like Tehama County, by doing well registration. Right? Every single year we send out these ownership-based requests for information for folks. Changes all the time, hundreds of parcels, hundreds of uses. And so we're going to have to try to get the most current land use data we always can so we can understand where and what is being used. So that's AKA, we just put down these lists as we were discussing, right, the number of acres of land use in a polygons. Define those gaps and see an overview of development and predictive models. In Tehama County, generally speaking, there is no restriction agriculturally anywhere of where you can plant an irrigated crop. So that restriction would only be based on the sole economics of doing so. Right. Obviously, at some point, you get into the foothills, trying to pump water to irrigated crops is going to be a problem. But there's no actual land use restrictions. What the dates and the ranges and current and forthcoming management policies. So what we're looking for here is, A, does anybody have any ideas of what information they think they need in order to make these types of decisions? And by the way, it may or may not exist. And we are just going to be honest about that. But what do we really need to make this decision? Here's the data gaps, which are certain, obvious, we absolutely know. I'll be presenting to you the best data that we have, but is there anything else?
Yeah, Mike Ward. One piece of data is not readily available, but I know it exists. And DWR Land Use Group identifies irrigation methods on a per-field basis. How available that data is, how comfortable they are with that, releasing that data, I'm not sure. But that data does exist. And when it comes to, I guess, irrigation or conservation measures, this has become pretty important down the road. And on a polygon, So for the people that are new here, we've decided to, and correct me if I'm wrong, or you can tweak it differently, Justin, but to look at the sub-basins on a polygon level basis and make decisions at a polygon level. Because as in the case of the Red Bluff sub-basin, not the entire basin is not an overdraft, just pieces of the basin are an overdraft. So we're looking at things on a polygon level. So I think as far as polygons, and this is easy get, I mean, we need the total acreage per polygon. And if we can get the ET data per polygon, that would be important too. And also, which I think you have, the acreage under irrigation. The other thing I'd like to get is volumes of surface water. So we've talked about that as far as what's coming in the Corning and the Thomas Creek irrigation districts. I'd like to know historically what's happened, and I think this data is readily available, but I think it's important here also was how does that data look for the future as far as a get, for the county. And also, I guess, what existing surface water rights, irrigation districts have in the county. And just to get that perspective, what can we do with surface water? I guess that's it for now.
Great. Thanks, Mike. And I've been adding that to the list. And thanks for also explaining, why do you feel like that's important to the conversation? Again, as Justin said, that we can't promise that we'll actually get this information from, within the time frame that we're working with of, having this management management program ready by January 2026, but the idea is that by having this conversation, we can go to folks like LSCE and say, like, these are the data needs, like, what do we think we can get during this time, and then advice on, like, okay, for the ones, for the pieces of information that we can't get, you know, how do we navigate those conversations? Because they're important conversations to have, and so that's the next step that we're hoping to get out of this discussion. So just an FYI there. But for
This is Ian.
Yeah, go ahead, Ian.
It's a derivative of a lot of this, but what's the sustainable yield per polygon? And my general comment on the polygons, and maybe Eddie, LSC, or they're Thiessen polygons, correct? So there's a given RMP, and that RMP, the border of the polygon means that that RMP is the closest representative monitoring point to any other RMP, correct? So how do you get a hexagon? Because I'm seeing a lot of this stuff on the Upper West Side is a hexagon. How do you get a hexagon with that methodology? And looking at the diagram, it sure doesn't look like some of those polygons are a Thiessen-type polygon based on that definition. This is probably not the place for that. And I was going to bring it up when you had the thing up there, but...
Yeah, and honestly, I'm going to tell you, I do not have an answer for you. So that's something that we'll have to get LLC to talk, to discuss at some point.
Yeah.
But we can put that on the list. Yeah.
Yes, Steve. I know it was a vast improvement over what we had started with, which was like three general ovals down. I mean, you remember that.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not an improvement, but looking at the diagram, I've got questions, and, you know, we're defining focus areas or special zones or whatever you want to call them based on those polygons. So what's the deal? And how do you get, I can't think of a way you can get a six-sided equal hexagon using that methodology. Maybe there is, and maybe I'm all wet, but that's my general concern.
Brendan, so I think we're all building on the same concept, but this is a should be a data-driven process, right? So that we can come to a recommendation for this group, which ultimately is only just a recommendation, but about what we should or shouldn't do with demand management. And so the quality of the data that we're using to make that, to drive that decision-making process is ultimately the most important thing. And so that goes back to my previous comment of, if we're using, we've made a presumption, or the assertion has been made that we know what groundwater levels are, or have been, or where they are now, or where they were, and where they're going. And that's based off of data derived from monitoring wells or wells that are being monitored. Shouldn't call them monitoring wells because they're just holes in the ground, ultimately. So we ought to know about the characteristics and therefore the quality of those wells that are being used for monitoring purposes. And so we know we've stated they're all different, or many of them are different from each other, and some of them are true monitoring wells, and some of them are not designed to be monitoring wells. They're just wells, or so I think, again, from the standpoint of data gaps, to have an understanding of how it's already baked in to some degree, because we've said we know what groundwater levels are, but if we can define how we know what groundwater levels are based off of what those wells are, what the quality or the characteristics are of those wells that are being used to derive that statement. Just try and think about it as we have to flesh it out, but
again, what is an ideal monitoring well? What does it look like? Like if an engineer was going to go out and build a monitoring well, which they do on a regular basis, right? So if I'm going to do a development of houses in a given area, and I have to go out and as part of the environmental monitoring or CEQA process, I got to go out and do monitoring wells and have to monitor them for a period of time and see what is the status of the groundwater and how it might be affected in the CEQA process. But so there is a definition of what is a good monitoring well. If we could say, well, this is ideal, and then these wells that are in these polygons that we're using to drive the decision-making process, how do they compare to what the ideal is? In other words, are they as good as, not really very good at all, or somewhere in the middle? And so that would be helpful, I think, for us to be able to say, if we're going to make a recommendation, and again, some of this is all baked in, so these are just recommendations, but if I'm going to be charged with or asked to make a recommendation, I'd like it to be as well informed as possible and to have an understanding of what is the data, where does the data come from for these. So that's on the list to be determined, right? And we may not ever get there, but I think that's my request, is to say, if you're telling me you know, or we're telling us that we know what groundwater levels are and have been and will be, how do we know that? And a lot of it's very technical and going to be a bit over our head in some case, and it's going to be model driven, and there's going to be assumptions in those models, right? But to the extent that it's possible, if we can define the data to make this the data is clearly defined when we're doing a data driven process for decision making, that would be preferred.
Thanks, Brendan. Justin, do you have a response to that? Do you want to?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think we can get the presentations about those things, and we can also individually look at each one of those monitoring wells and just talk about what we know and what we don't know
right.
about them as well.
It doesn't have to be it.
We can absolutely do that.
Yeah.
And I think that also speaks to one of the things that Justin mentioned about where we might want to prioritize our time, was also thinking through, like, where those small polygons were might be where the data, you have the more confidence in the data, and so that's a better opportunity to have those more informed discussions. So again, there's ways to have these conversations where you do feel have a better sense of and more confidence in the data to be able to make some recommendations for change.
Michael, the other piece I think that we need here is recharge data. And where that, I know we have a recharge assessment effort going on in the county, and we have all these potential sites for recharge. We do need, you know, periodic updates on that, and whether those numbers are showing and what polygons they apply to, stuff like that.
Yeah, Steve. So the data and the lack of confidence in the data and the modeling seems to be a common thread here between a lot of us. And I'm wondering if, you know, not knowing what's used in the model, in terms of what data is used, I know they probably drag in quite a bit, but has the model been tested against historic, you know, groundwater levels, for example? Have they retrospectively applied the model to data that was 15 years ago or 20 years ago? And how confident are they in that model then? Because if we're going to try and use it as a predictor, we should know at least if it has, you know, if it's getting something close.
So I'm hearing.
So how have they tested the model?
So I'm hearing data validation as well as asking LSCE to again do a presentation on better understanding the development of those predictive models, as well as kind of maybe doing a presentation of what are the limitations or assumptions that went into the current model. So, but just
yeah, no, I think that's very doable, and these models that are used to predict sort of long-term groundwater have been used at a state level through DWR for, you know, decades. So I think there probably is some of that data available. I can't specifically answer it because I don't know everything, but we can discuss that.
I laugh because I was on the State Board of Food and Agriculture back in the early 90s, and we had a presentation by DWR, and the fellow that was making the presentation stated factually that he doesn't understand why Northern California doesn't take advantage of their abundant groundwater. It's a resource they should be capitalizing on, like shipping it south. So predicting models, you got to predict politics along with it, and I don't think we want to go that route.
I don't know where to put this in the order of discussion, except that the groundwater dependent ecosystems, that's a big one, right? I think you just stated it sort of quietly, but it is effectively going to move the goalposts, mm-hmm. right? So we're gonna spend a lot of time and effort in saying this is the state of the state in regards to supply and recharge and use and types of use and what, and then we should make a recommendation on what the county ought to do about groundwater, and then all of that will be redefined at the point in time that whoever it is going to tell us what the ecosystem needs, the ecosystem beyond us humans needs to for water supply, and then the goalposts will move most likely in a direction that we're not going to be happy with. But so I don't know what to do with that except to say that's disconcerting.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And that's why it's up there in that big list of huge data gaps. And I cannot speak for the consultants, but I do know that they are already working on these delineations. They are already starting to have these discussions now, and it's my hope that we should at least get a realm of effect prior to making these final decisions. I hope that will be available by the time we do, because it's going to be important, right? I mean, how do you say, okay, this is the final when it's definitely not going to be?
Right.
So I hope that we'll have enough of that data to make the decisions.
The demand side of the equation will change radically, right? When we say that everything within the 100-year floodplain needs X amount of water to survive, or anything within X amount of feet away from an ephemeral stream needs X amount of water to survive. That will change the demand side of the picture radically.
And more we are getting an idea from the state of what their expectations are that we do in response to GDEs. So hopefully we'll have enough data. We'll have enough information or guidance from them to even be able to say, okay, this was what looks like it's going to be the effect from GDEs.
I think, this is Ian, I think one of the key things there is recognizing when we went through the GSP process that non-native plants like Arundo consume huge amounts of water and should not be supported but should be eradicated.
Yeah,
let's it'll change. I mean, it'll change.
Sign me up. I'm with you.
It'll change that calculation significantly, I believe, for the better.
Other data gaps or data needs for folks? Well, if folks, I mean, this is the list that we intend on going back to LSCE and getting so that way we can come back next meeting to be able to kind of go through of like here are the pieces of information that we think that we can get and any advice on navigating where there are pieces that we do not think we'll get in time. But anything else to add here, folks? not, certainly not your last chance, but again, the more that you can identify these early on, the more likely that we can get a better sense of, like, okay, how do we navigate with that or without that information.
I have a question. This is Ben. What outside agencies or groups environmentally are watching this and have impact to this, such as California Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, any of your defenders of wildlife, those sort of things? Do they weigh in on this and have a say, and are they active in this whole plan? I would assume they are.
Yeah, so we, our GSPs have gotten comments from many, both NGOs and governmental agencies associated with environmental protection. I suspect, well, I know other GSPs have gotten more involvement. I think we're somewhat fortunate that we're hidden in this realm of Northern California, but we're not as hidden as some may think. And there are definitely NGOs that have made comments. I just don't know how many of them are watching and haven't made comments yet.
Certainly, yeah. I remember also, Fish and Wildlife, and then also TNC did the comments on, well, they did, they provide comments on a lot of GSPs that raised a lot of those kind of environmental concerns. So those are sources of information that can help also be thinking through potential impacts. All right. If folks are fine with that, then we can move on to we can go back to the resolutions that Justin had reviewed over it, and having a conversation again, just thinking through, like, what are the topics and issues that are most important to you all, and where do you want to be spending your time, and where do you feel like particularly that this working group can really contribute substantially to the Groundwater Commission and ultimately to the board of directors. I will go back to wherever in the world this slide is and try to not do that to you guys. All right. Let's just do this. All right, pulling up again the resolutions. So just opening up the floor to you all. I mean, like, this is now open discussion time. The issues are important to you, initial ideas that you might have that for this group to be exploring. This is now an open floor.
Don't everybody jump at once now.
You're first.
Can I just make one suggestion? And I hope that all of you will, sort of take this as a sort of first piece of homework. I think the most important thing we can come up with is what are the very, very best ideas for voluntary programmatic that we think can work, right? Every time you try to, force the hand, you get the pitchfork back. If we can solve issues with voluntary programs, it's in my best interest in governments, because I'm not going to get a bunch of phone calls from angry people who just had something forced upon them, right? So if anybody has ideas of programmatically that we can use, I would love to hear from you about what those are, and I would love to have discussions with those in this group. So I think those are, like, the easiest thing to implement if they work.
This is Mike. I think I appreciate what you're asking for. I think the problem I have and coming up with a list is a good thing, but I don't know that we completely understand the magnitude of the problem. And that's where I want to get as soon as possible. And so, that's why I'm requesting this data, especially the safe yield data on a polygon level basis. To me, that's critical. Then we can have something to talk about. I mean, what's feasible for these different areas? Whether even volunteering efforts make sense at all. So that's kind of, for me, that's probably the most important thing to accomplish as soon as possible with the data we have, and then look at those data shortfalls figure out, and knowing those data shortfalls, maybe that will make us a little more expedient on trying to fill those data gaps, you know, or get more monitoring points out there, whatever is needed. I think the other area of concern is that we have clear evaluation procedures. And this is something that's been was in one of your slides, but I think that echoes what people are saying here too, is that we need to have a uniform, clear evaluation procedure for all the data that we have. So those two things are important to me. I appreciate your push for ideas, but I think we can put those ideas in perspective when we have this other data.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, not untrue at all.
This is Ian. Your dry farming and fallowing, incentivize dry farming and fallowing like money?
Yeah, it can be money, but it also can be, lessen of a restriction or a regulation on another piece of property. So like a trade.
Incentivize.
Yeah.
So one thing to build off of that and thinking through, like, if which types of which types of incentives do you think would work or would not work? So again, like, if funding was kind of the basis for the incentive, how do you think that would play out? Do you have any things where, like, what would be the benefits? What do you think could be some of the concerns or constraints? So again, like, those are opportunities to kind of delve into some of these issues of, like, okay, if there was a particular thing that would help with one of these components, like fallowing and dry farming, what are the pros and cons related to those? So we have a better understanding of what that could be and what are the trade-offs.
Yeah, particularly you folks that do this for a living are going to have a way better perspective than I ever would of what could work and what cannot, right? I think that's sort of the key, is what could actually work. What would, like, get people to be involved in that process or things of that nature? Because me just saying, hey, guys, would you please do this, is very likely to have next to zero results.
Comment. Dry land farming as it relates to commercial agriculture in this area of the country, there's one or two crops that might fit within that, and they're not economically viable generally. So it's not a good use of time to talk about how are we going to incent people to go move to dry land farming in Tehama County. Land use changes essentially means a move away from commercially viable agricultural operations into what essentially is fallowing of farmland. And if I paid X per acre for a piece of ground under the assumption that I would have an economic return to make that a viable land purchase, the only way one would be incentivized to change their land use is if they had another economic alternative to get a return on investment, or that land is purchased for a relative value. So, again, I mean, we know the answers to some of these, right? So I don't know that spending a lot of time talking about them. Ultimately, it's as it relates to commercial agricultural operations. Those are carefully chosen words, because a commercial ag operation is different than just agriculture. The only thing that's going to reduce a person's use of water, an operation's use of water in those instances, is money, either in the form of land purchases or a offset to a reduction in revenue.
And also, to be clear, though, a savings of costs associated with other regulatory activity could also be construed as that incentivization, right? Where you're saying that If you do this, you will receive less cost in the future associated with this work. Right? That's also, that's that same, that's money from a different angle.
Right. If I stop farming, I will not be charged with X for continuing to farm. Correct me if I'm interpreting this wrong, but again, if you need an economic return to your investment, which is your land, your agricultural real estate, if you need a return on investment, then just stopping doing the thing that might cause you regulatory harm is not enough to stop doing it, right? I suppose it is if you say you're gonna fine me for keep doing this, then the loss is less than if I stop doing it.
Yeah, no, I think to be clear, I'm not talking about I'm talking about the trade-off of reward for doing something like setting aside a small piece of your property to do recharge on.
Right.
Berming or containing water on your property to allow that rain that we do get to soak in and permeate as opposed to run off.
Stormwater retention facilities.
Yeah, we're talking about activities that cost money, right, but that could be a trade towards regulatory cost in the future. Does this make sense?
Yes, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, not necessarily specifically.
Yeah, I'm being maybe more dramatic.
And by the way, I get it.
Yeah.
So I'm not telling you you're wrong.
Yeah, I think what I'm trying to say is that we ought to define what is a non-starter, right? Or not just not feasible. So like dry land farming in a commercial agricultural economically viable system is not is really not on the table, right? If you want to plant wheat hay, for example, or wheat, dry land wheat, there's plenty of places in the country where that happens. This is not one of them. Not to say you can't do it, it's just not economically viable.
Yeah, it surprises me every day how much I learn how much dry land wheat farming there is in Tama County on the west side. I've seen more and more, but it's really in areas that are not excellent for irrigated agriculture.
Right. And
I think that's really helpful, Brendan, to frame it up that way of when you're thinking of particularly the commercial ag operations, what could be some non-starters, and so because of the limitations of just for dry farming, that might be a pretty short conversation. So, then I also had a couple of ideas that you had listed of what incentives or compensation could look like in the form of land purchases, offsets, or savings. There's definitely different ways to go about incentives. So just capturing what I've been hearing. Others, what do folks feel like are kind of like, if you also need to be like, what are some of those we must discuss? Like, what are the ones that you're really, really feeling strongly about that are like either because you think that there's a lot of great potential, or because you think like they're the stickier, more challenging ones that would be good to be for folks to be kind of discussing and having a dialogue around? So what are the kind of the must discuss, good to discuss, or the ones where it's like, we can delegate someone else to work on that. We don't need to, this group does not need to really, really delve into it. So are there things that are kind of, I mean, and this is the volunteer potential immediate measures, but there's also, I mean, certainly if you want to talk sticky, complex items, then certainly the phased measures kind of bubble up from my perspective.
Yeah, but to Brendan's point, he's not wrong. Let's also eliminate things that we know for sure will not work so we don't spend any time doing them. 100% true. Both sides of that are true. Of, hey, let's say what we think can work, and hey, let's say what we should not waste our time on at all.
Bill, I think the discussion really should start on identifying one or two or three of these focus areas that is really, we could all agree, is an overdraft. I would like to know how that overdraft, the time frame on that overdraft calculation, but that we can get to that. But if we could identify, just say one of them, and know what the farming was in that area, then if we come up with a possibility of filing it, some of it, it's a lot easier to do than trying to make a wide-swept calculation for the whole county. Seems to me that we're going to get started on this process. We got to start somewhere, and that would be my suggestion on how to do it.
So what I'm hearing is that for this group, maybe focusing on where do you think that the problem is most severe, and then there's also kind of building off of what we heard also of where the problem is, the concerns are really severe, and we feel like that there, we have a sufficient data information to have an informed discussion around those and to be able to kind of come up with very more specific potential measures, demand management measures that could work and be impactful in these. So just pulling up some of the previous maps that we had had that kind of identified some of those focus areas. But thanks for that, Bill.
Just to add to that, I'm not sure that we have to pick the most severe areas, but I do think I like the approach, and I feel that we need to identify some sample polygons and have the data that we have and evaluate just, you know, on a very small scale, what is this process going to look like? What's the thinking behind it? And then maybe apply that or begin to apply that approach to the rest of overdrafted areas. But I think that's the way to go, is start small and feel our way through this.
So I could see both of those kind of working in as, you know, we looking at the different types of polygons, you know, they might fall into kind of some kind of characteristically similar buckets, and so there should be a discussion around the ones where, like you said, the focus areas were big groundwater concerns. That said, let's not forget the other ones. There should be a discussion around, like, what would be the process for addressing these other ones, whether or not, because they're more maybe the yellow zone, or that they're in the area where, you know, the polygon is kind of large, and so I think combination could be easily done. Other thoughts, so folks want to really, really focus your conversations on, at least, like, this is kind of like a where do you want to be spending a lot of your time or your kind of initial time, not taking things particularly off the table, but again, it's to help you all prioritize to make sure that we're talking about the things that mean the most to you.
I think there's a statement on one of those slides that's about that phased implementation, and it says how much demand management is required. Right, and so that, again, from a data-driven process, in order, we can brainstorm about viability of particular demand management techniques. But I guess we need to get to where is demand management required and how much demand management is required, right? So that's that data-driven process. And I think what Bill was saying, what we want to try to avoid ultimately in this process is a one-size-fits-all solution perceived solution.
1045.
Is implemented at a county-wide level or sub-unit, sub-basin level that is punitive to some where demand management is not required. So I think what we've seen, if you look at that previous map and some of those polygons that go from the foothills or say west of I-5 more appropriately, clear over to the Sacramento River. And you could say, well, all right, a mile from the Sacramento River, groundwater is sitting at 30 or 40 feet, and then you move out west of I-5 and it's sitting at whatever, you know, 100 plus feet. Are you going to implement the same demand management reduction for all of the water users within a mile or half a mile of Sacramento River that it look like the demand management reduction that's going to happen a mile west of I-5? So that's what I would like to see, if we can avoid doing that, that would be success, so that we have appropriate measures in appropriate places.
I think that's the whole purpose of the polygons.
Right, but I think you said, well, how do we get these polygons?
No, I know.
Right.
I know what I've been told.
What do they encompass?
I know what I've been told,
yeah.
But just looking at the map.
It doesn't make sense to all of us, right, or many of us.
Yeah.
About the size and location of those polygons.
Well, and just the shape. Like I said, how do you get a hexagon?
Yeah.
You know, so if you have equally spaced RMPs, sure, I could see where you get that, but you don't.
Right.
And how do you get some where the RMP's right on the borderline? You know what? It could be totally correct. I'll be the first to say it, but I'd sure like to hear that from LSCE and exactly what they did there.
I would imagine they have to say you have to draw a line somewhere.
Supposedly, if they are Thiessen polygons, it's a calculation that RMP is the borderline is the point where anything within that is closest to that RMP versus the RMP in the next polygon. And so if that's in fact what happened, I just not, you know, it's bothered me for a long time, and I'd really love to see Eddie tell me what's up.
Stephanie, so what's your intent with this slide that's currently up?
To test your vision with very tiny fonts. No, sorry, Mike. I think if one, just because there's multiple slides, but this was one we talked a bit about the voluntary. The kind of the, on the flip side, though, is the next step of the and oftentimes the trickier and more complex one of there's certainly things that we would want to do that's voluntary and done immediately. At the same time, as we had said, demand management has to be part of the conversation. This kind of delves into like that next tier, and so this is a place that I think would be important discussions.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the four bullet points, allocations, well restrictions, pumping restrictions, and water market trading, and our fee structures, I think we all need to be experts on that, I think. And I'm hoping through this process that's what we become. I've always been pushing the idea of allocation. I don't know if that's appropriate or not. And I just want to hear... I'll get as much perspective on that and what that means and how people are impacted that way. I've always had a problem with water market trading. I don't know how you implement something like that in this county. And I think what I've read or researched on is that it still creates localized groundwater impacts. Or at least that's my take on it. And so, but I think it's worth talking about. I think we need to understand it. I want to build on all of those bullets if we can.
I'm going to run out of time today, but allocations is one, just to put a pin in something. I'm not sure I understand what allocations means. I could guess, but maybe that can be, I mean, it's pumping restrictions ultimately, it's yeah. Well restriction, pump restrictions, allocations, who gets to use water where, I suppose. But that might be a deeper dive item for a future date.
Absolutely.
To the extent that we have possible, it's like, all right, we can all understand what pumping restrictions mean, right? You got to use less water.
well restricts means you can't drill a well, or you can only drill wells in certain areas at certain depths. In the water market, I think is more difficult as you describe it. Maybe we can understand further. I would like to understand further what allocations means. I would define this slide as the stick, and the other things about voluntary items is the carrot, right? Is in a crude way. In other words, if we don't come up with some voluntary actions which mitigate demand, then these things probably will happen.
The other side of that, I feel, is this is the direction the Flood Control Board wants to go. They want to jump into these first and then worry about those other things later.
Yeah.
And that's my biggest concern, is that they're all for grabbing the stick first and see how wide they can swing that.
Right.
And then we'll worry about the rest of the details.
So I could see like the next meetings or one having more a presentation more that's going to help us better understand the model, so better understand like the data and what does that tell us. So that piece of information, as well as more context of better understanding, what do the allocations, well restrictions, pumping restrictions, water trading, what does that mean? So getting, again, like trying to hone in on where we want to know more, and then being able to delve into things like Todd was saying, where the board is interested in. So you can see that those being a top topics for discussion at the next meeting. We are getting to the top of the hour again. Like this was the initial brainstorm. This is not saying that this is the last time that we're going to discuss it. This was an opportunity to kind of jumpstart your thinking. So really appreciate all the things that folks have been saying. But in terms of one ask I did actually especially for some of these topics, if folks have ideas or examples, resources of, like, for instance, cases where examples, you know, in California, elsewhere, where any of these have been done well, or conversely, you think would not do well in Tehama, all of those pieces of information, we definitely, like, please send that on over, because that will really, really help the discussion. So folks have resources that they can share. That would be great. But.
Actually, I have a couple of comments. So, I would agree that I think we need to address the data and the model before we can move a whole lot further. You're asking us to make a lot of assumptions right now when there's people in the county that would even argue that we're not in overdraft. And so I'm not a believer of that, but I think that we need to better define what our data is telling us and what the models are telling us and the assumptions that we're making, because right now we're being asked to make some decisions without a lot of data. The other perspective I'd like to look at is, I think it was brought up at that infamous Corning meeting some months back, where we tried to do a joint meeting with Glenn and Tehama County, and it was a disaster. In that meeting, there was a water rights lawyer that spoke up that contended that any restrictions that were made with respect to allocations or well constructions or pumping restrictions had to be applied equally across the entire county, or there would be a lawsuit as a result. That, you can't prevent a lawsuit, but she contended that everyone had to bear the pain equally, or else it was discriminatory. So I'd like some clarification on that as well. And I know you're probably ready to weigh in right now, Justin, on that, but that's something that we need to look at again, or else we're spinning our wheels with these polygons and trying to do something over here when we're not going to try and apply it, for example, closer to the river where we don't have problems. The last thing I guess I'd be concerned about is in terms of any of these punitive measures, that they punish existing growers, existing pumpers, while we allow continued increase in demand by newly irrigated property. And I think that's an elephant in the room. Nobody wants to talk about well restrictions and land use restrictions, but at some point you know, we can save and we can recharge and we can do all those things, but if we continue to stack increased demand on a limited resource, we may not make much headway.
So the only thing I was going to weigh on is just to tell you that I think I have somebody who is a water attorney and a professional who does this for a living who can help to refute some of those comments. And the person who said that on the line is currently involved in many, many of those litigations that she referred to.
Well, it's so, Steve again. So at our next meeting, I'd like to at least hear from Eddie. You know, again, we got a lot of questions, and we can postulate all we want, but we need to hear from him.
So hearing, definitely want to be pulling in LSE to on the technical aspect. There's also a bit of the kind of the litigative component that would be, it would be, we have resources to kind of pull in and give some advice of as part of better understanding some of these types of the phase potential measures. And then point noted definitely of just like it the kind of the fairness and equity concerns of implementing some of these on existing pumpers. And so again, just noting that one.
This is Ian.
Go ahead.
So at the end of the last CSAB meeting, Eddie made mention that I think it was Tulare, but I'm not sure, one of the sub-basins was going down the road of first use, first right, and that they were proceeding with that and that it was legal. Now, sitting in on the Corning sub-basin GSA meetings, their attorney indicated, and this was a few months ago, so it was prior to that statement, that that was not legal. It seems like there's a heck of a lot of conflicting advice, both locally and some of the other water attorneys. I'd really like to know more about that particular situation. I think that that's would end up being important.
This groundwater use in the state of California hasn't been litigated yet, so we're gonna find out, right? I mean, this is new territory for
the
state of California
now.
about groundwater rights. The state passed a law that says that, you know, we have to address overdraft, but they didn't write any other law that says things like you're talking about, first in time, and there is no adjudication of groundwater rights in the state of California. So not to say that there won't be in the next 20 years, but there won't be before we're required to turn in this report. I don't know. Those are sort of unknowns. We're going to potentially recommend policy that's absolutely illegal. Or I guarantee
you know, there's multiple opinions,
right.
And that's the thing.
Right.
It's
like
it'll get litigated. Listening to her comments at the Corning Subbasin GSA, it was like, absolutely, this is the way it is. And
there's no absolute.
I don't think that is true.
Yeah, there's no absolutes on groundwater in California until it's litigated.
We get conflicting opinions from lawyers in the same office representing us.
No,
so
I'm
like,
well aware.
Which direction do you go?
Yeah, a higher court will decide.
Stephanie, I think one of the things I want to add to either the voluntary or potential measures is general plan considerations with respect to demand management. So look at zoning and come up with a recommendation to the board in that respect. I'm hoping we can achieve that.
Adding general plan considerations. We are at the top of the hour, and I know I was cruelly asked Nicole to not put a time frame, so we were aiming for to have this meeting just within an hour and a half, and so I think that I want to try to stick to that as much as possible. So though I asked, like, if it could be 2 hours, that was an option, but I think that you all will not let me come back if I do that to you. So if folks are, if anything that they want to add to this conversation, let's definitely, we want to create that space. Otherwise, if folks are fine, we have tons of great input and great kickoff for this discussion. And so certainly the next steps are to take this information. The next step certainly is to we'll develop a high level outcomes on this. We have a nice long laundry list of things to discuss with LSCE as well as with County General Council to better understand some of these things. We have an added list of the topics of discussion. So my thought is that I will certainly update the draft charter per this conversation, and so. Two items that we do want to get done today before we completely adjourn is, one, if folks can just take out whatever your calendar so that way we can identify when the next working group meeting will be. As part of that also, if there are any volunteers, any one to two people, it would be great if someone would want to, willing to work with us as we start planning these meetings. And so, again, it would be kind of thinking through, like, what topics would we want to address? How might we want to have that discussion? What pieces of information are going to be important? Those kinds of discussions, it's always helpful to have another person, another thought partner through that process. So if there are volunteers,
I'd be happy to volunteer.
Mike?
As far as the meeting dates, I thought we'd pretty much agreed on Wednesday, third Wednesday mornings. Is that not true?
Groundwater Commission would be, we just thought this one possible week.
We're looking
at the 25th. Because we have to December. Be aware of other groups that meet in this room. And so I had previously already had the fourth Wednesday booked out for the rest of the year.
So what are we talking about?
So does the fourth Wednesday mornings work for folks?
Yes.
So that would be
moment.
25th?
25th at 8. And 2 hours would be great, 8:30 to 10:30.
I'm with. 2 hour max.
Have to assign a stopping point or else we'll be here. We won't run out of things to talk about.
Does that seem like it'll function for all of you? I understand that if an individual cannot make a specific meeting, I understand people have stuff they have to do. I will just inform them of what has happened, and we'll keep them up to speed in the next series of meetings. So it's okay to miss, but if we can set it, let's set it.
Yeah. Nicole, will you send out an invite on that, too?
And on that same topic, if anybody has some good information to share with the group, let's get it out before then so it's not just a data dump when we get to that meeting.
Yeah, I emailed everybody as a group, so you all have each other's email. Talk. Totally okay. Talk,
we don't
share
any,
ideas.
There's no brown neck restrictions.
No issues there. Talk to each other.
Nope.
Yeah, that's the point. That's the best thing about having an ad hoc is that you can send each, hey, I found this thing, look at this, and we can talk about it.
Is it possible that, because I know I'm going to miss some meetings coming up this fall, I know people phone in, but can they talk or they can only listen? If I'm away and have a chance to just be in, is that a possibility? I hate to miss. Yeah, I can get email and tell you, but the discussion is nice.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I don't run afoul of something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like a Zoom thing, possibly?
Email you and tell you what's possible.
Okay.
Just in line with what Todd suggested, I mean, can we make a working group website, maybe you already have, where we can post docs that we think are important to the conversation?
Sure. I think we should make like a SharePoint where you guys can each post documents if you want to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for hanging in there. A really, really great kickoff meeting, and we'll follow up very soon. So thank you.
So do I need to come to a special meeting tomorrow? Hey, Ben.